It's Friday, July 12th. I'm Travell Anderson.
And I'm Priyanka Aravindi, and this is What a Day, the pod that's never rented a DVD from Redbox, but we're still sad that it announced yesterday that it's shutting down.
Yes, you can still rent DVDs from your local library, but how long until Republicans shut all of those down, too?
I hear that's buried deep in Project 2025, page 900. The vibes are not good for the libraries.
On today's show, inflation's cooling to the point that the Federal Reserve might cut interest rates this fall. Plus, there are several hot sports finals to catch this weekend.
But first, yesterday, President Biden gave his first solo press conference since November of last year. He gave no indication that he would consider dropping out, but let's talk about his performance since it was very closely watched. He gave his remarks in D.C. after the NATO summit, where he spoke at length about policy and did give some very thorough answers. But there were a few moments where he stumbled. Take a listen to this brief excerpt where he mixed up the names of his own vice president, Kamala Harris, and his opponent, Donald Trump.
Look, I wouldn't have picked Vice President Trump to be vice president, but I think she was not qualified to be president.
Ooh.
I don't think anyone watching that in that moment was having a good time. That was not great. I should add that there were very few mix-ups during the event, but obviously all eyes were on Biden. There was very little room for flubs, if at all. This has been the topic of conversation since the debate. So there were a lot of eyes here, and it almost seemed that like every flub, every pause, every cough, it was a moment of, oh no, what's happening?
Mm-hmm.
Many viewed yesterday's press conference as a make or break moment for him after his struggles during last month's debate. More and more lawmakers have joined calls for Biden to bow out of the presidential race. So this moment was a huge deal. To get an idea of folks' immediate reaction to Biden's remarks, I spoke earlier with Abigail Tracy. She is a political reporter whose work has appeared in Vanity Fair, Forbes, and Inc. magazine. I started by asking her what stood out to her about the press conference, the good and the bad.
Earlier this week, I was speaking to a Democratic strategist who's close to the White House and speaks with a number of members and lawmakers on the Hill, who told me that they never believed that there would be one interview or one press conference that could kind of undo the debate performance. The reality is Joe Biden is 81 years old. And I really think it's almost impossible to put the genie back in the bottle at this point. And when we were headed into this, you even saw defections leading up to the press conference itself. People weren't really even waiting for the president to see his performance. Like, Right. Then we're getting the reports regarding the fact that the Biden campaign is pulling Harris in a Harris-Trump matchup and, you know, advisors contemplating and strategizing the best ways to convince the president to step aside in this moment. So I think a little bit we're kind of on a seesaw that has already hit the ground. And it's very difficult at this point to see how you kind of change the weight of that seesaw back in a position that benefits Joe Biden at this stage.
Coming out of this, where do you think we go from here? Do you have any predictions or any idea of how the next few days or even just today will shake out? You know, there are reports that we will see more and more people that is expected to kind of come forward and say that Joe Biden should drop out of the race. That was reported before this press conference. What do you think we'll see in the next few days?
Ahead of the press conference on Thursday, we saw a number of Democratic offices come out to say that they've already drafted press releases in either direction, calling for the president to stay in the race or calling for the president to drop out. And I really think when you boil that down, like that is the essence of this moment. That shouldn't be something that people are drafting press releases for. And one of the really interesting things is I spent earlier this week on the Hill, and it was almost more interesting what senators were saying by what they weren't saying,
right,
if that makes any sense at all.
Right.
We sat with Nancy Pelosi, right? Nancy Pelosi, she's saying, we all want Joe Biden to make this decision. It's up to Joe Biden to make this decision. But Joe Biden has routinely come out,
right,
as has his campaign, to say, I already made the decision.
He's made his decision. Yes. They would like him to keep deciding.
Exactly. And that is the crux of it, is the fact that you have a Nancy Pelosi, notoriously, to the chagrin of Democrats at times, measured in her words when you look back at, you know, her announcing an impeachment inquiry, for instance, against Trump. Like, here's an individual who is parsing her words, choosing them carefully. And she is coming out to say, Joe Biden, you know, this is ultimately going to be his decision to make, when ostensibly Biden has already made the decision.
Right.
And you saw that from a lot of senators. And nobody is saying Joe Biden needs to run. Joe Biden does not have a full-throated like backing from so many of these individuals,
yeah.
even in the Senate, where you do find like typically more measured and pragmatic voices. So I think next week is going to be a little messy. And we're going to see kind of how it shakes out.
That was my conversation with political reporter Abigail Tracy.
Thanks for that, Priyanka. As of our recording time at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Thursday night, more than a dozen sitting Democrats have publicly called on President Biden to leave the race. One of the first to do so was Illinois Representative Mike Quigley, who I had the chance to interview. He's been in Congress for 15 years and represents parts of Chicago, where next month's Democratic National Convention will be held, as well as some of the city's northwest suburbs. I started by asking Quigley whether Thursday's press conference changed anything for him.
It doesn't, but it reinforces one of my concerns in that he's talking and that the only thing people are focused on is how is he performing? How is he doing? That's been that way ever since the debate. People are, how is the president functioning instead of talking about Donald Trump? It's all about Biden, not about Trump. And that's hard to change people's minds when they're just looking for it. I think he's doing fine in this press conference, but my impression is that people are saying, okay, he did fine now. What about tomorrow? And I think that uncertainty is what's hurting him. You know, I think he'd have to have a long string of masterful performances before people would say, oh, it's okay. This is a race that's going to be decided, as they all are, by a handful of votes in a few states. It's hard to win them all back.
Yeah, you were among the first lawmakers to publicly ask President Biden to leave the race after the debate. Could you walk us through how you came to that decision?
I was looking at the pre-debate polls, and they were not good. Afterwards, they're only going in the opposite direction of where they need to be. In fact, he's being outperformed by down-ballot races, raises very legitimate concerns at the top of the ticket, and all these races is dragging people down. As you know, the House and the Senate are controlled by a handful of votes, handful of seats. Those frontline races are really, really close. So I thought the first thing I would do is raise my concerns, which I did about a week ago, show the greatest, I'd like to think, respect and thoughtfulness and appreciation for the president and his legacy, that he brought us from the depths of January 6th and COVID and did so many other great things. Maybe he needs to consider what this race might mean, not just for the White House, but for the House and the Senate. And then I saw the reaction, I saw the continued polling and the interview, and it was time to be more direct. I guess you'd call it tough love.
Yeah. Did you have any concerns about Biden's ability to run for another term before the debate?
Absolutely. But I think the concerns that the public had are being reflected in how people view how things have changed for the president over a relatively short period of time. So if anything, those concerns were accelerated.
Now, based on media reports, it seems like most of the Democratic lawmakers agree with you that President Biden should not stay in the race, but they are so far not willing to say so publicly like yourself. Is that a fair characterization? And if so, why do you think that's the case?
There is grave concern about the president's ability to win and how it will affect the House and the Senate. You know, I hear things like, hey, it's not, you know, we can't clear this up in 2028. There's a real concern about how it'll affect the possibility of future free and fair elections. So this is the ball game. First, I think they're processing this, thinking about how to handle it best way. Second, I do think there's a lot of members that can't bring themselves to do this just because of how much they like and respect the president and appreciate what he's done in 4 years. The final concern I've heard is that fear of the unknown, unprecedented change in mid-course so dramatic like this. Does it come off as chaotic? Does it make it any better? How do we look? Who would be the best? So I think there's a lot of questions about that that make people hesitate.
Are you frustrated at all that so many of your colleagues won't go that extra step and say that Biden needs to step down publicly at this critical juncture in the race?
I don't want to judge how they decide to do this. I would just stress, in my mind, they really need to do this. The future of our country, our democracy, democracy across the world. The fact that this is first, second, and third about Trump, the specter of a Trump second presidency. This isn't about loyalty. This isn't about fear of temporary change and the chaos that you may think come from this. This is about where we're going to be for all time. So whatever the risks anyone believes are involved, you got to do it.
If Biden were to drop out, would you support Vice President Kamala Harris as the party's nominee? And if not Harris, then who?
I have the greatest respect for the vice president. I think she'd be a great candidate. I know she'd be a great president. But I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, A, out of respect for the president, and B, I think how that change takes place is very important because I think it has to be viewed as legitimate to the American people because they've talked about, well, we've had primaries and that's democratic. But we also have rules that were democratically put together and a process to make a change here. If we just leap ahead and pretend that that isn't there and that other people don't have a right to have some input, I'm just a little concerned that that sounds like it's fait accompli. We don't care what you think. Maybe it loses some degree of legitimacy. All that being said, she would be the favorite to move forward. And I think President Biden has a lot to say about that. The greatest respect for her. I think she'd do a great job. I'd be proud to support her. Whoever the nominee is, I'm all in.
Mm-hmm. And in an open convention, we're hearing more and more is a possibility in your home city, no less. We know you represent parts of Chicago. And an open convention could be extremely messy. It could further fracture the party. Does that worry or concern you at all about that possibility?
The Republican Party kept a nominee who's a convicted felon, an abuser, a person who incited an insurrection, a coup, and an extraordinarily long list of evil deeds. And if he denies being anything near Project 2025, I think his first term shows that he'd be right in line with Project 2025. Look, it's not going to be easy. We're in uncharted territory. It'll be a mess. But I think we can get through it because I think back to the strength of the Democrats is we wouldn't tolerate that. And we have concerns here and we want to move forward in a positive way. I think as soon as there's a change, it's all about Trump again and his cognitive issues. Speaker Pelosi pointed that out as well. She thought it was an issue for both. It's absolutely an issue for Trump. But then again, it gets back. We're not talking about whether our nominee had a good press conference or not. We're talking about Trump all the time. There's plenty to talk about, and it's all bad.
You just said as soon as there's a change. Does that mean you think this is inevitable, that Biden will absolutely step down?
I can't tell you what's going to happen. I know a lot of my colleagues agree with me. You know, what are the factors in a decision like that? It's truly up to the president. He's deserved that right. What will factor into that, I don't know. Family, friends, polling, donors, where the unions stay with them, and, you know, does another shoe drop? Any number of factors. But I'd like to think that the decision is made very, very soon.
Picking a new nominee, even just the idea is being considered a risky decision, especially with just roughly 4 months to go until the election. Why do you think those risks outweigh the benefits of sticking with Biden as the nominee?
I'm not a pundit and I won't get into the polls. A lot of the smartest pollsters I know are telling me just how serious this is. There's a lot of really smart people who understand these numbers, who are the ones who are strongest in encouraging the president to step down as a nominee. So there's some uncertainty there. There's some risk. But I think the greater risk is the status quo. I think the way we were going, we are going. We lose the House. We lose the Senate. We lose the White House. With the green light from the Supreme Court, it's an unabated autocrat. Let's appreciate that and just how dire the circumstances are. You got to do something.
Biden won the Democratic primary in 2020, and while the names being floated to replace him now are somewhat different, they're not so different as to not raise concerns that they may not fare much better than the president in a race against Donald Trump. But I want to end on a hopeful note for my last question for you. What gives you hope that a new nominee could be the person to beat Trump and push back on what we see him and the Republicans putting forward?
Day one, it's a horse race, and it's a fight we can win because it's about Donald Trump. I think you can combine it with the Biden legacy, which is a strong one. I think he's got a great 4 years as president of the United States, one he should be proud of. So I'm optimistic. With a strong nominee, we're in a horse race. And for all the things we're talking about with President Biden, we're talking about in spades with Donald Trump. His abilities, his age, fair or not, talking about age singularly, it will be the issue for him. And he couldn't say, I don't want another debate. I'd love that opportunity, because the great tragedy of that first debate wasn't just that it went so poorly for our president, but it let Donald Trump off the hook. He couldn't get past all the lies he told. We've got a sharp nominee. They can hammer him to the wall on that.
Representative Quigley of Illinois, thanks so much for giving us some of your time today.
Thank you. Take care.
That was my conversation with Congressman Mike Quigley of Illinois. As we've been saying for weeks now, this story continues to move quickly and evolve, but we're keeping an eye on all the twists and turns for you, and we'll continue to keep you updated.
We'll get to some headlines in just a moment, but if you like our show, please make sure to subscribe and share it with your friends. We'll be right back after some ads.
Hi, I'm Alex Wagner. I do not need to tell you that being an American right now is a wild ride. But as a longtime journalist, I am not interested in the noise or the fear-mongering. I'm interested in the stories at the heart of the headlines. That is why every week on my show, Runaway Country, I'm joined by folks in the middle of the crossfire. From disillusioned MAHA moms to newly fired immigration judges to Epstein victims themselves, to understand what it means to live through this political chaos as an actual human being. And now I'm excited to tell you that Runaway Country is available ad-free to Friends of the Pod subscribers. Friends of the Pod is the subscription that supports the work Crooked does as an independent media company and gives you a ton of great bonus and ad-free content. With the midterms approaching, you are going to need more content to keep you sane. And now you can find Runaway Country right there. Subscribe now at crooked.com/friends. Hi, I'm Alex Wagner. I do not need to tell you that being an American right now is a wild ride. But as a longtime journalist, I am not interested in the noise or the fear-mongering. I'm interested in the stories at the heart of the headlines. That is why every week on my show, Runaway Country, I'm joined by folks in the middle of the crossfire. From disillusioned MAHA moms to newly fired immigration judges to Epstein victims themselves, to understand what it means to live through this political chaos as an actual human being. And now I'm excited to tell you that Runaway Country is available ad-free to Friends of the Pod subscribers. Friends of the Pod is the subscription that supports the work Crooked does as an independent media company and gives you a ton of great bonus and ad-free content. With the midterms approaching, you are going to need more content to keep you sane. And now you can find Runaway Country right there. Subscribe now at crooked.com/friends.
Let's get to some headlines.
Headlines.
As we mentioned earlier, the three-day NATO summit wrapped up on Thursday in Washington, D.C., and while Biden's post-summit press conference got most of the attention, there were plenty of other notable developments, particularly with Ukraine. On Wednesday, NATO members released a statement condemning China as a, quote, decisive enabler of Russia's war against Ukraine. The statement also called on China to end its support of the Russian war effort. In response, a spokesperson for the Chinese mission to the EU denied denied many of the claims made by NATO, saying the organization's statement was, quote, provocative with obvious lies and smears. NATO leaders also committed more than $40 billion in security assistance to Ukraine over the next year and said that Ukraine is on an irreversible path to NATO membership, a move that Russian President Vladimir Putin opposes. Meanwhile, reporting Thursday from CNN revealed that NATO members are also on alert after the U.S. and Germany uncovered a Russian plan to assassinate the head of a German arms manufacturer that has been sending weapons to Ukraine. A spokeswoman for the U.S. National Security Council told CNN that, quote, Russia's actions will not deter allies from continuing to support Ukraine.
Okay, Trayvall, this is not meant to throw you under the bus, but I will say, as we were reading this through, we did stumble on the names. Vladimir Putin, Volodymyr Zelensky, they almost have the same first name. So it's becoming more and more understandable where that flub came from.
Listen, I'm understanding Biden more and more day by day.
Putting the spotlight back on Biden's opponent, former president and convicted felon Donald Trump welcomed Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban to Mar-a-Lago on Thursday night. This is the second time that the two men have met at Mar-a-Lago this year. Orban, like Trump, is known for making racist and xenophobic statements and supporting rollbacks of LGBTQ rights. Earlier this month, Orban met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. He was also just in China for a sit-down with Chinese President Xi Jinping and Russia for a meeting with Vladimir Putin. Orban is calling these talks a, quote, peace mission, but the U.S. and other NATO members have expressed skepticism that Orban actually has Ukraine's best interests in mind, considering his close ties to Putin. Thursday's meeting with Trump is also a sign that Orban is looking ahead to November and making plans to further his right-wing agenda in the event of a second Trump presidency.
Inflation is coming down. That's according to new data from the Consumer Price Index. Prices only rose by about 3% in June, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. That's down from 3.3% from that time last year. And overall, prices went down by 0.1% between May and June. Now, that might not sound like much, but this is the first time that prices have meaningfully declined since May 2020. The new data suggests that the Federal Reserve could lower interest rates as early as September.
More price declines, please. Let's keep them coming.
Mm-hmm.
And y'all, we know it's been a very heavy few weeks in the news, so we here at WAD want to encourage you to take a little break from doom scrolling this weekend. And if you're a sports fan, you are in luck because there are a lot of big events happening. In tennis, we've got the Wimbledon finals. I will be tuning in for those. Very excited. The women's singles final is on Saturday and the men's final is on Sunday. There are also two massive soccer games happening on Sunday. Spain takes on England in the Euro Cup final, and then Colombia plays reigning World Cup champions Argentina in the Copa America final. Sadly, the U.S. men's team crashed out of that tournament and subsequently fired their head coach, Greg Berhalter, on Wednesday. It leaves the team without a head coach with less than 2 years to get ready for the 2026 World Cup, which will be co-hosted by the U.S. That's okay. I mean, like, we only have, like, 4 months left to the election. Do we have a nominee? I don't know. Crazier things have happened. We know when it comes to soccer in America, the women's national team tends to get a little more love and a lot more gold medals than the men's team. But shout out to the men. We are rooting for you, too. Apparently, this has turned into a podcast that wants to promote men's sports. So, great. Love that.
Listen,
for us.
Listen, we are living in unprecedented times in more ways than one, Priyanka.
Yeah, while you're watching all those women's sports, take a break and please save some attention for the men, I guess, maybe. And those are the headlines. One more thing before we go, in case you missed it, John Lovett is officially back from his top secret mission to save democracy. Is that what we're calling Survivor now? And that means Love It or Leave It is in full swing. Catch tomorrow's episode where he is joined live on stage by Jay Farrow, State Representative Janelle Bynum, and Marcy Giroux to break down the biggest stories in politics and culture. New episodes drop Saturday. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode.
That is all for today. If you like the show, make sure you subscribe, leave a review, give yourself a doom scrolling break this weekend, and tell your friends to listen.
And if you are into reading and not just ebooks from my parents' local library like me, God, I'm being called out. Well, today is also a nightly newsletter. Check it out and subscribe at crooked.com/subscribe. I'm Priyanka Aravindi.
I'm Trayvall Anderson.
and rent everything from your library. Or your parents' library. Just whatever has the smaller wait list.
Listen, get you a library card because I know a lot of you ain't got one. What a Day is a production of Crooked Media. It's recorded and mixed by Bill Lance. Our associate producers are Raven Yamamoto and Natalie Bettendorf. We had production help today from Leo Duran, Michelle Aloy, Ethan Oberman, Greg Walters, and Julia Clare. Our showrunner is Eric Morrison, and our executive producer is Adrian Hill. Our theme music is by Colin Gilliard and Kashaka.
Hi. I'm Alex Wagner. I do not need to tell you that being an American right now is a wild ride. But as a longtime journalist, I am not interested in the noise or the fear-mongering. I'm interested in the stories at the heart of the headlines. That is why every week on my show, Runaway Country, I'm joined by folks in the middle of the crossfire. From disillusioned MAHA moms to newly fired immigration judges to Epstein victims themselves, to understand what it means to live through this political chaos as an actual human being. And now I'm excited to tell you that Runaway Country is available ad-free to Friends of the Pod subscribers. Friends of the Pod is the subscription that supports the work Crooked does as an independent media company and gives you a ton of great bonus and ad-free content. With the midterms approaching, you are going to need more content to keep you sane. And now you can find Runaway Country right there. Subscribe now at crooked.com/friends.